Parsha of Korach is very complex, and the one at the center is the most complex of all. It's Korach himself. And something of an insight into the impetus and the agenda of Korach is provided for us by Rashi. And Rashi asks the question, Umaro'o Korach lachlok al Moshe. What was Korach thinking? I think once we become unfamiliar again with the fact that Korach went to war against Moshe, and we start from the beginning, what got him going? Rashi says the answer is not very inventive. It's one of the oldest causes of machlokas and exists until today. Envy. Niskane al nisiyuso shel Elitzofen ben Uziel. He was jealous. Elitzofen ben Uziel was the nasi of the family of Kehos. Each of the families of Levi, Gershon, Kehos, and Merari had their nasi. Kehos, which is where Korach was from, had the nasi Elitzofen ben Uziel. And Korach feels that he's been stepped over. Because, as Rashi says, he makes the cheshbon. In my father's generation, there were four brothers, Amram, Yitzhar, Chevron, Uziel, and Amram is the oldest. So Amram's sons take the first cut, Moshe and Aaron. But who's next? Yitzhar is the second brother. I am the oldest son of Yitzhar. And Amram ran out of sons. And I've been passed over, and the Nesius was given to the son of the youngest brother. Uziel was the youngest of the four brothers. Elitzofen ben Uziel, this was too much for Korach. And he set in motion the machinery of the machlokas of Korach v'chol ados. That's the Rashi, I think it's well known. And I would like to ask two simple questions on this Rashi. Firstly, how does Rashi know that Korach was motivated by anything other than what he says he was motivated by? In other words, there is an official platform of the machlokas. As the pasuk says, ki kol elo kulum kadoshim, why should only the Kohanim have the avoda? We all want the avoda, and at a certain level, that is taken seriously, because Moshe gives them the contest of the ketores, and apparently, that's what the machlokas is about. So, if that's what the machlokas is about, at least according to many people, or for many people, and as far as Korach is concerned, he's flying the flag for that question as well, so how does Rashi even know to ask what is motivating him, implying that we're looking for something else? Who says there is something else? It happens to be that there is. The answer is from the Medrash. The Medrash tells us that he was envious over the appointment of Elitzofen ben Uziel, but the fact that the answer comes from the Medrash isn't part of Rashi's job. If the question didn't come from the Pasuk, we would never look to the Medrash for the answer. And as al derech ha-pshat, he says he wants the kahuna, maybe that's all there is, looking at the Pasuk. So how does Rashi know there's more? That's the first question. The second question is, if you have the Rashi in front of you, you'll notice something very interesting. And that is that the Rashi that I just quoted from is halfway through the Dibur of Vedoson Va'aviram. And that's unusual, because Doson and Aviram have enough problems of their own. We don't need to bring in Korach and start talking about him there. Korach had his own segment. He begins, Vayikach Korach. And Rashi spends the whole time telling me what the word Vayikach means and doesn't say anything about Korach. And then when we move on to Doson and Aviram, Rashi says, oh, and you know what Korach was you know what he wanted from this whole thing? I don't know. I would have wanted to know when we spoke about Korach. We're currently speaking about Doson and Aviram. So it seems to be too late. Chutz l'makomo. These are two questions which I think are simple and straightforward Rashi questions. And I believe that they will actually answer each other. Between the two of these questions, the answer will come out. In the following way, Korach's group has different factions in it. Even within his group, there's groups within the group. You have different types of people that probably would never share the same four amos were it not for the fact that Korach brought them together. On the one hand, you have Dothan and Aviram. Dothan and Aviram, who are known troublemakers, they're not interested really in anything else, except for making machlokas and trouble for Moshe. They lead the machlokas part of the political part of the altercation here. You have 250 men who are all, I mean, they have a fault in that they fell in with Korach, but they're all motivated by something which is much more noble. They're looking for the avodah. They genuinely feel deprived of the kahuna. Now, they're wrong, but of all the things to be wrong about, it's on the higher side. The pasuk refers to them as hachatoim ha'ila b'nafshozom. They sinned with their soul. Sometimes you can sin with your soul. You want to feed your soul something that's not good for it. Like if you're not a Kohen, you want to feed it kahuna. Now, if that's true, then certainly the most enigmatic of this whole group is Korach himself, because he's able to hold together such diverse groups. The heads of the Sanhedrin would probably never share a table with Dothan and Aviram under normal circumstances, and here they are, because Korach brought them together. The question is, what about Korach himself?
The head of the Sanhedrin?
Yes.
Who?
Nesi'e Eda, Adas Korach.
Oh, Nesi'e Eda.
Rashi says, Rashi Sanhedros. The question is, if we can find out, which of them does Korach has more of an affinity for inherently? Well, how can we know? The answer is, well, who's mentioned first in all of this? Korach. And now the question is, who's mentioned next? Because whoever Korach has most of a essential affinity for, they will be the ones who are closest to him. There may be hangers-on. There may be people that got involved. But in terms of the people that are closest at heart to where Korach is, they are his prime partners. So who is next? Lo and behold, Dothan and Aviram. And that already raises a flag about Korach himself. Because how can Korach have more in common with Dothan and Aviram than he does with the 250 men? It should have said, Vayikach Korach, and there was Anashim Ibn Yisrael Chamishim Masayim, and somehow Dothan and Aviram got involved as well. Not so. No sooner have we mentioned Korach than the next people mentioned are Dothan and Aviram. They are his partners. The 250 men do not even receive a mention in the first pasuk. In the next pasuk, we'll get to them. But they are segregated from Korach's plans. But if that's true, then apparently Korach doesn't really have that much in common with them. They want the kahuna. And if that's all Korach wanted, he would be near to them. But he isn't. So what does he want? It's good shaila. That's Rashi shaila. In other words, the fact that the Torah has grouped Korach together, his chavrusas are Dothan and Aviram, and his crowd is the 250 men, I mean, essentially he has more in common with Dothan and Aviram. That's right. I mean, there must be more to it than asking for the kahuna. And that's why Rashi asked the question. And that is also why Rashi asks the question in the dibur of Dothan v'Aviram, and not in the dibur of Vayikach Korach. Because if all you've read in the pasuk is Vayikach Korach, you have no reason to suspect that there's anything more than what the pasuk will say. It's only when you see Vadasan Va'arim following on immediately after Korach, you actually need to go back and take another look at Korach himself. And that's exactly what Rashi does. So I believe that is at least part of the understanding of the Rashi. And what we see is that ultimately it is motivated by an issue of kina, of envy. That's a prime component in Korach's machlokas. So the Mefarshim raise a shaila. If what is motivating Korach here is he's bitter over the appointment of El Tzafan, he's been looked over, so let's ask a historical question. When did this happen? When was Elzaphan ben Uziel appointed as the Nasi of Mishpachas HaKahas? The answer, as we know from the beginning of the Sefer, is more or less as soon as they were counted and as soon as they all of the Levim were given their jobs. This is in Chodesh Iyar. We're currently in Chodesh Av, at least because last week was the Chet HaMeraglim, that's Tisha B'Av, which means a good few months have passed between when Elzaphan was indeed appointed. Korach apparently has let it go, doesn't seem to be that bothered by it, and 5 months later he wakes up and he can't take it anymore. So the question is, what are we to make of the delayed reaction of Korach? If he's bothered, so bothered by Elzaphan ben Uziel, he's been the Nasi for 5 months. So, as they say in the modern Hebrew literature, Ma pitom achshav. Why now of all times? It's a little late. Rabbi Yonasan Ivershut says, very simply, al derech hapshat, that the reason why Korach only moved to make a machlokas now is because it's only now that they realize that whoever is the Nasi now will probably be the Nasi for the next 40 years. In other words, prior to the disaster of the Meraglim, when entering Eretz Yisrael seemed to be a matter of days away, so everyone anticipated, certainly as a possibility, a reshuffle of who was in charge. Indeed, it's a delicate point, but the Zohar HaKadosh says that the Nasiim themselves did not want to go into Eretz Yisrael because they thought that they'd be demoted. There was the worry of maybe things will change. So if maybe things will change, so you're going to go to war for 3 days? Over 3 days? That's not wise. Ride it out. It will be within a few months from the appointment of Elzaphan ben Uziel, we'll all be in Eretz Yisrael, and who knows if things will change. If things haven't changed, then it's time to take action. But if you want to become the Nasi now, and then get pushed to the side in a week's time, that's not worth it. And therefore Korach considered it prudent to bide his time. But post the Meraglim, whoever's the Nasi in the Midbar, everyone is basically going to see out this time in the Midbar for the next 40 years at least. At this point, 40 years, as we know, is a long time in politics, and therefore Korach decides it's time to mobilize. So this is Rabbi Yonasan Ivershut's explanation as to why he was okay until now, but things have changed, and Korach himself needs to try and make affect his own type of change. An amazing response to this question as to why now, what to make of the timing of the machlokas, it seems to have come out of the blue, not apropos of anything, is to be found much earlier on in the writings of the Ramban. And the Ramban says, and we'll see there's a great irony in the explanation of the Ramban, the truth is, Korach has taken on a gargantuan task. He's looking to turn the Jewish people, or at least a large chunk of the Jewish people, against Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, that takes some doing. Everyone knows on a certain level that their existence in the Midbar, with the man that they eat every day, is coming to them in the schus of Moshe Rabbeinu. There has to be some type of Hakoras HaTov. And if we know it, they know it. Which means, says Ramban, all things being equal, you try and it sounds like the definition of impossible. Mission impossible. Turn the Jewish people against Moshe Rabbeinu. It can't be done. As the Ramban writes, they probably would have stoned Korach. Not even wait for the Besdin to raise a hand against their Moshe Rabbeinu. Everything they have is from him. All of that changed after the Meraglim. And the reason why is that post the Meraglim, the Jewish people are in a state of disillusionment about Moshe Rabbeinu. Why? Because he didn't save them again. The history of Chumash so far, of the Yetzias Mitzrayim so far, has been a history of Moshe Rabbeinu extricating the Jewish people from death and disaster, from mass destruction. And so much so that we get used to it. And they got used to it. As far as they're concerned, There's nothing Moshe can't do. There is no disaster that is looming over the Jewish people that he can't get them out of. Because he did it in the Egel, and he did it in the Misononim, and Moshe is just out of this world. He can stop anything. HaKadosh Baruch Hu listens to him, he can save us from anything. That was there. They began to develop a picture of Moshe that there's no trouble they can get themselves into that he can't get them out of. Which is a very dangerous picture to have. Because last week, to everyone's surprise, Moshe couldn't get them out of it. It was enough was enough. And they went too far, and Moshe's davening for them, and didn't help. And they're left to die in the Midbar. So the amazing thing is, as far as we're concerned, of course, we can't talk this way, but that should have happened a long time ago. But as far as they're concerned, Moshe failed them. Because he didn't do the impossible again. And that's his job, is to do the impossible. There's no such thing as impossible. And therefore, the irony is that it is the unbelievable picture that the Jewish people have of Moshe Rabbeinu that led them to be upset with him that he couldn't get them out of this one as well. Even though, because the answer can't be that it couldn't be done. And in this climate, when Korach starts to make a move against Moshe, there's enough grumblings which may be latent that can be ignited. And that's exactly what's behind the timing of the machlokus of Korach. I wonder if perhaps, just as a postscript, there may be something else. And that is, Korach did something very insidious. Because he presents himself as a man of the people. For the people. And what that means is, everything he says that in his opinion, Moshe's done wrong, is Moshe has acted against the Jewish people. Because he's keeping them down. Ki kol ha'edo kulam kadoshim. We're all holy. We're all as holy as you. We're all as holy as each other. There shouldn't be any reason why one should be a Kohen and another shouldn't be a Kohen. Now, what's interesting is, prior to this point, when the Jewish people were doing very well as the Jewish people, so if a person wants to say, listen, you're holier than this, what type of reception would he get? But post the events of Baal Osecha and Shelach, with the Misononim, and Kibros Hatava, and the Meraglim, the Jewish people are not feeling that holy anymore, because they're just making mistake after mistake. Which means, at this point, when Korah comes in and says, Ki kol ha'elo kulam kadoshim, he's offering them hope. That's his card. He's offering them false hope. Because really what he's saying is, you're probably disappointed in yourselves. Moshe's looking at you like you're not that holy. But you are holy. And the Jewish people, or certain factions of them, grabbed onto that. Because what does a person who's not holy want to feel like, if not holy? And therefore, when Korah came through with Ki kol ha'elo kulam kadoshim, a lot of the Jewish people followed him because he's the only one who's offering them, who's calling them kadoshim. At this stage, everybody else is calling them could do better. And this is, in a sense, part of the very seditious part of Korah's machlokas, because he's using the people to further his personal ends, but ultimately, it's a very mercenary act, because when the time comes, he's not interested in it. The Shem Yishmor says that the test that was given to Korach and his men was the test of Ketores, of all things, as the most dangerous one. Why Ketores? Ketores, according to the Gemara in Maseches Krisus and Daf Vav, represents the unity of the Jewish people. The word Katar in Aramaic, which is very close always to Hebrew, Kutra is Kesher. Ketores is the kesher, the interconnectedness of the Jewish people. That's why one of the spices of the ketores has actually a very foul odor. Chelbana, which is galbanum, if that helps. And the Gemara says that it has a foul odor, but when you put it together with the others, it brings out the best in them. And that's the way the Jewish people have to be. Never turn your back on anyone. says the Shem Yishmuel, says the test for Korach is the Keturah. Because that's the test which really will determine whether he is a Keturah person. Is he essentially at heart connected with the interests of the Jewish people or not? If he is, if he has the interests of the Jewish people at heart, Keturah can work well for him. But if he doesn't, it will be a disaster for him. And especially if it has been used the platform of the Jewish people just to further his own ends, Keturah will be his undoing. And what's interesting is, there are many people who follow Korach. And at a certain point, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe, tell everyone to get away. We are in Perek Tzayin Pasuk Kaf. Before that happens, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe vel Aaron emor, Hibodalu mitocha eidah hazos, va'achale osam karoga. So you, Moshe and Aaron, distance yourself from this eidah, from this group, and they will be destroyed. Now, what happens at this point is very interesting, because Moshe here davens for some of them, because he says, Vayiplu apaneim vayomru, pasuk kaf beis, keil elokei ruchos l'chol basar, ha'ish echad yecheta, va'al kol edotik tzof. Can it be that one person will do an aveira, will sin, and your anger will be on all of the Eda? Can that be? And the answer is actually, it comes in pasuk kaf daled, daber la'edelim, or tell the Eda to move away. So, as a progression of what happens, it sounds like originally, everyone was to be destroyed. Whoever is the Eda, that's what it sounds like, whoever is the Eda. And with these, those who had sympathies, let's say, with Korach, right, which may not be everyone, but it's a much larger group than ultimately were destroyed. Moshe davens for them. Oh, he's the sinner. How can you be angry at the Eda? What did they do wrong? And the answer is the Eda themselves have to separate. So the question is, what exactly changed between these two stages? One of the late Rishonim, the Akedas Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak Arama, he was one of the Megurashei Sfarad, and his classic Sefer Akedas Yitzchak, so he has an interesting Shaila. Moshe asks, as a matter of wonderment, rhetorical question, can it be that one person doesn't have Eira and your anger will be on the whole Eda? Can that be? Says the Akedas Yitzchak, I'm not entirely sure why that's considered to be not true. Because it's something actually that we found. If it's really true that, for example, in the Chet HaEgel, there were a core number of people who were involved in the Egel and they were all killed, but the entire Jewish people have suffered for it. And no one said, Ha'ish Echad Yecheta. And it doesn't matter if it's one or more than one, because the point is against the rest of the Jewish people. 3,000 is still a fraction of the Jewish people. So can it be that only some sin and everyone suffers for it? Apparently, yes. We've seen it. And if that's true, then why is Moshe talking about it as if it can't be true? Ha'ishachad yecheta va'alkol yedotik tzof. We've seen it before. You may see it again. Achan, who pillaged from Yericho, that's one person. Ha'ish echad yecheta va'al kol eidah katzaf. There was a disaster later on. Other people suffered from it. So what exactly is behind Moshe's claim here? So the Akedas Yitzchak says something very interesting. It's true. We do find often that even if one person doesn't have Eira, the fallout can be shared by the greater community. It can happen. The reason why it can happen is because of the concept of Arevus. Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh. Yisrael are responsible for each other. They're connected to each other. And sometimes what that means is that they have to take some of the fall for each other. They're a group. It's true. However, says the Akedas Yitzchak, and I think this is a big chiddush, there is one type of Aveira where that will not be true. And that is if the sin in question is Machlokas. Because the very nature of machlokas is a person who sets himself aside from people, who is looking to disassociate himself from people and set himself against them and set people against each other. So the very fabric, the very nature of the aveira of machlokas is to disconnect people from each other. And if that's the nature of the aveira, then there is a certain inner circuitry of mida keneged mida, whereby any punishment that happens will be borne by the person who did the aveira. You cannot have it both ways. You cannot say his very aveira is that he detaches himself from the klal, but the klal should share some of his punishment because he's part of the klal. His aveira set him aside from the klal. And therefore, in this particular instance, Moshe said, with regards to this aveira, you cannot be ha'ish echad yechata, ish echad, one person segregated himself. He's not part of the Eda anymore. They shouldn't have to bear his wrongdoing. Now, what happens at that stage is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, agrees, so to speak, because Moshe has davened, even for Adas Korach, he's davened for them, for the greater Eda. But one thing is true, and it's a very interesting insight into Pasuk Kaf Dalet, which says, Daber la Eda lemor, tell the Eda, Hayalumi saviv, lemishkan Korach dasan va'aviram, tell them to move away. Why should they move away? Well, I think if we imagine the scene, they probably wouldn't want to be anywhere near what was about to happen. That's true. But it's also true that the hole in the ground, in any case, was tailored for whoever was responsible, which means that it may give them a bit of a scare, but no one will go down who doesn't need to go down. And therefore, it may be a little bit more than merely saying they should move away so that they don't fall in when the ground opens up. Why do they have to move away? Says Yakedas Yitzhak, the reason why they have to move away is because that is what will entitle them to be saved. In other words, and it's very interesting to consider, perhaps in our minds when we think of Parshas Korach, so we think of two groups. The party faithful, right, who were with Moshe, and those who were with Korach, and never the twain shall meet. And those are your two groups, black and white. But the reality is, there were a great deal of people who may not have been actively involved in Korach, but you have to wonder whether there were certain people there who they have the luxury of doing nothing, because no one's actually asked them whose side they're on. So it can't hurt to wait and see. Strange as it sounds, something's happening. We always thought that Moshe was the one. Here's Korach. We're not going to get involved. There's many people that would never get involved in Korach. But you never know. They are the Eda in question. And here, the Torah is saying that there's one thing they need to do. They're not actively part of Adas Korach. But in order, they do need to make amends, even for sitting on the fence. And one thing they do need is to distance themselves from Korach. In other words, he needs to see, before the outcome, they need to make a decision. They need to face Moshe and face Korach and say, I'm not in the middle, I'm with Moshe and not with Korach. If they can't do that, then perhaps they are actually sharing some of what is wrong with Korach and they don't deserve to be saved. It's very interesting. We have a similar concept in Parshas Vayera. There's a lot of connections between Bayera and Korach, the whole city of Sodom, which was also destroyed in this miraculous way. And Lot is a complicated person as well. And is he a tzaddik? Difficult to say. Is he a rasha? Difficult to say. He's saved, but he's saved in the schus of Avram. And the malachim say to him, Maher himale chama, run. Hurry. Run away. Now, And they even say, we can't do anything until you've run away. So he's holding things up. So the question is, says the Be'er Yosef, if he's holding things up, so why not give him a hand? You're capable of destroying an entire city. You're not capable of transporting one person just a safe distance away. If his presence is hindering your destruction, so you're malachim. Part of your job is to get him away. You can do it much quicker than he can, and then get on with it. Says the Be'er Yosef, no. Lot had a lot of credit with Avram. He didn't really do that much. But one thing he does need to do, he has to run away from Sodom. He has to turn his back on Sodom and say, I do not wish to be there anymore. He cannot be removed from Sodom. He has to remove himself. That much he has to do. And the same is true for the greater Ada of Korah, who may have been to have taken the do-nothing option until now. At this point, they need to understand that's not an option anymore. You have to do something, because at a certain point you're either with Moshe or you're with Korah. And if you don't want to be with Korah, you need to actively align yourselves with Moshe. Now, what's interesting is, as the punishment comes down for Korach and Dathan and Aviram, so that's in Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Let's take a look. So Moshe has said, has called for the ground to open up. Vatiboka ha'adama asher tachtehem. And the ground opens up. Vatiftach pasuk lamed beis. Vatiftach ha'aretz es pia. The land opens its mouth. Vatibla osem es pateim. Swallows them up. Their houses. Ve'ez kol ha'adam asher lo korach. All of Korach's people. Ve'ez kol ha'rechush. And all the property. Now, that's it. If we look very carefully at this pasuk, we will see that it seems to be divided into two. Because it starts by saying, Vativtach aretz es pia, vativla osam vespateim. The land swallowed them up. That's how it begins, with a pronoun, with them. Who are they? Well, we would have thought Korach and his people, but that's not true, because the next words say, Ve'ez kol adam asher lo korach, all the people of Korach. So if people of Korach are mentioned in the second half of the pasuk, then who's the them in the first half? Well, the them is going to be Dathan and Aviram, because they are the most previously mentioned people in pasuk Kaf Zayin. Dathan va'Aviram, so v'Dathan va'Aviram yotzi nitzavim Pesach ohaleim. So you have, and they are the them, and Korach is Korach. Is there any difference between them? It seems there is. Because the pasuk says with regards to them, i.e. Dathan and Aviram, that the land swallowed them up and their houses. When it comes to Korach, it says, Ve'ez kol adam asher lo korach, ve'ez kol ha'rechush. All of Korach's people and all of the property. So, rechush and bateihem are not exactly the same. It seems like, for some reason, the houses of Dathan and Aviram were destroyed, but the houses of Korach and his people were not destroyed. But why not? We don't know. There's an interesting Rambam in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, in Perek Dalet, Halacha Dalet, who talks about a concept which is called Ir HaNidachas. Ir HaNidachas, as we know from Parshas Re'eh, is a city an area, territory, where certain people have been inciting the populace to act in an anti-Torah fashion, Avodah Zarah. Now, what's interesting is the Parsha begins by saying, Ki matze be'achad sha'arecha, should it be in any one of your gates, meaning any one of your cities? And there's an interesting halacha about that, which the Gemara says in a number of places, that Yerushalayim can never become an Eir Nidachas. I mean, if it came to that, we'd be in trouble anyway. But Yerushalayim can never be an Eir Nidachas. And the reason why is because Yerushalayim was never owned by any particular Shevet. It was the property of the entire Jewish people. Yerushalayim, lo nischalka lashvatim, machlokus tanoim. That's how we understand. So, Ir HaNidachas, this disaster city, is introduced as Be'achad Sha'arecha, one of your cities, meaning owned by someone. Yerushalayim is owned by everyone, and therefore it's outside of the profile. That's the Gemara. Now, interestingly, the Rambam has an addendum to make, so to speak, on this Gemara. Because the Rambam says, it appears to me that the same is true for an ir miklat. He doesn't say it appears to me. He says the same is true for an ir miklat. What's an ir miklat? As we know, there are certain territories that were set aside for if someone kills Bishogeg, he goes there to that city. That's the ir miklat. Similar, an ir miklat cannot become an ir nidachas. Now, the Gemara never talks about it. And the Ravid, in fact, who's never shy about commenting on the rulings of the Rambam, so the Ravid says, I've never heard anything about this. The Gemara says Yerushalayim cannot become an ir nidachas. But an ir miklat, ir miklat belongs to each tribe. I mean, they set it aside as a city of refuge. But it belongs to them. Well, apparently, as far as the Rambam is concerned, as the Rabbi Yosef Karo explains in the Kesef Mishnah, the Rambam understands that once the tribe designates an area as an ir miklat, it no longer belongs to them. It's communal property, and therefore it has exactly the same din as Yerushalayim. It's no longer achad she'arecha. Okay. What does this have to do with us? Well, there's an interesting Gemara in Maseches Vochim, Daf Kuf Yud Zayin, which talks about the concept of ir miklat. Was there such a thing before we went into Eretz Yisrael? Once we were in Eretz Yisrael, so there are any number of ari miklat. But before we went into Eretz Yisrael, was there such a thing? What if a person killed Bishogeg in the Midbar? There would be such a thing. Is there any place for him to go? So interestingly, the Gemara says there is, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, V'samti l'chol makom, I will give you a place. That's Hashem talking to Moshe. I will give you a place, meaning, even when you're alive, even now, straight away, there's already a place called an ir miklat. The question is, where is that? The answer is, V'samti l'chol makom. Your place is the ir miklat. Where is Moshe's place? Moshe's place is the Machane Leviyah. Therefore, the Gemara says that if were there ever to be a case of Ritzicha Bishogeg, unintentional manslaughter in the Midbar, so where's the Rotzeach going to run to? He runs to the Machane Leviyah. That's the Ir Miklat. So we have in the Midbar an Ir Miklat in the form of Machane Leviyah. Says the Rogachov Gaon, the Yerushalmi in the 10th Perek of Sanhedrin will tell us that it's very interesting to look at it in this way. Korach's actions qualified, when you think about it, they probably even overqualified as an ir nidachas, because he is single-handedly looking to turn the entire Jewish people to deny the divine origin of the Torah given through Moshe. So it is the original template of an ir nidachas. And the din, by the way, as the Torah says, what is to happen to an ir nidachas is that those involved need to be killed. What they're doing is the worst, one of the worst crimes imaginable. And their property is to be destroyed. And the house has to be destroyed. And this, says the Rogachover, is the reason why the houses also went down. So everything is looked at in this through a halachic lens. Vativ la'osam v'esbatehem. Because their area has the din of an ir nidachas. And everything has to be destroyed down to the house. Because the house belongs to them. So with regards to Dasan and Abiram, it says, Bativ la osam espatehem. But then it moves over to Korach. It says, what about Korach? His people, the people who were with Korach, their houses were not destroyed. Their items were, but not the houses. And why? Because Korach is a Levi. His people live with him in Machane Leviyah. Machane Leviyah is an ir miklat, and an ir miklat can never become an ir nidachas. And that's why even though personally his assets were lost, his rechush, his valuables were lost, but the houses never went down because the houses don't belong to him. That's rechush tziburi, because Machane Leviyah is an ir miklat. So it's quite something to look at the parsha in this way. I think Kriyas HaTorah in the Rogachover's shul is probably very different than it is anywhere else. But as you look at a pasuk like this, and we've seen it so many times, their land was opened up, and then the things went down. But look at it closely, you'll see different things for different people, and it's all gecheshbund based on the Yerushalmi and the Gemara and the Rambam and the Ravid and and everybody else. That's an altogether different way of looking at the Chumash. Now, what's interesting is Korach's influence did not die with Korach. Because lo and behold, in Pasuk, Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Vav, it keeps going. Vayilonu kol adas b'nei Yisrael mimachras, al Moshe val Aaron leimor. They complained. Tiluna, vayilonu. They complained against Moshe and Aaron. They said, Atem amitem, it's Am Hashem. You killed God's people. And it sounds like you can't win. Korach was involved in his machlokas. They got their comeuppance, and the Jewish people said, you killed them. What's behind this? Are you not aware that they deserved it? I mean, what exactly is the charge here? Atem amitem es am Hashem. So the Mefarshim explained that the Jewish people came to Moshe and said, your choice of test was a little harsh. When they say Atem amitem es am Hashem, they're referring primarily to Adas Korach in the sense of those that took the Machtos, those that took the Ketores test. Ketores test is deadly. There must have been about another 10 tests that are not deadly. You can get a rap on the knuckles, but it won't kill you. And of all of them, Moshe chose Ketores. So they say, you chose a lethal test. I mean, have a look at what's to come, meaning in a Perek's time, towards the end of the Perek, when it's not clear whether is Levi really, really the chosen one, and Aaron is really within that the chosen one. So they took their staffs, and they put them in the Mishkan. And the winner is the real one. His staff blossomed. No harm done. The message is clear, and no one gets killed. That's not what happened here. It's very interesting to note, by the way. Should we ask the question? That's a good shine, actually. Of all the tests to choose, why choose the one that can kill the person that loses? That's a little harsh. It says, Mariel Diskin, if we look closely at the Psukim, we will see that it's not so simple at all. Because initially, when Moshe proposes the test in Pasuk Zayin, he says, Zosasu, this is Perek Tet Zayin, Pasuk Zayin, Zosasu, Kechulachem Machtos, Korach v'chol adoso, take your machtos, and then usnuvohen eish, put fire on them, v'simu aleim keteres, then put the keteres, and that's the test. Now when you put the fire on the machtos with the keteres, that's a danger zone. That's the eish zora, asher lo tziva Hashem. And if you get it wrong, that can kill you. So why does Moshe choose such a dangerous test? The answer, says Maral Diskin, is very simple. Moshe at that point was not convinced that any of them would really go through with it. In fact, even looking back, it's impossible to work out why they did go through with it. Which means, as is often the case, Moshe was looking to deter them, as if to say, you wish for the kahuna, okay, here's a test. Take the fire, take the keteres, are you ready? Moshe was sure that they, at that point they would say, okay, actually, maybe we're having second thoughts. Which is what any sane person would do. Lo and behold, to everyone's surprise, including Moshe's, they all turned up the next morning with their fire pans. Moshe wasn't expecting to see them again. He thought that the notion of the fire test would be a deterrent. So have a look what happens now in Pasuk Tet Zayin. Everyone's turned up. Vayomer Moshe el Korach, Acha v'chol adoscha heyu lifnei Hashem, atah v'hem v'Aaron macha. Okay, you should all be here. If you really want to be here, all turn up tomorrow. Ukechu. Yeah. Loose translation from this point onwards. And take the machtos and put keteres on them. What's noteworthy about this pasuk? There's no mention of the fire. Where did it go? It says the Maral Diskin, Moshe took it out. Because if they're really serious about going through with the test, Moshe's not going to tell them to bring fire. If they bring fire, they'll be killed. Yesterday he said bring fire because he thought that would scare them off, and so it should have done. But if they're still here, so Moshe says, we'll do something else. It would be like Eliyahu b'Har HaKarmel. You bring everything but the fire, and whoever's the real one, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, will supply the fire. No one has to get hurt. So it's a revised version if they're really going for the test. But then what happens? As the pasuk proceeds to describe, they brought the fire anyway. In other words, they didn't want to have the revised version, and therefore they actually went through with what Moshe thought, only said when he thought they would never would go through with it, and that's what happened at the end. So the Jewish people take a dim view of all of this. It hasn't finished yet. Atem amitem es am Hashem. And now what happens? Pasuk. So we are now in Perek Yud Zayin. Pasuk Tes. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe l'imor. Hey, Rome, and we talk about Eda also. So what, once again, get away from this Eda. Vachaleo sam karaga, which is very familiar terminology. That's what was said yesterday. Vayiplu apenehem. So now what happens? Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayomer Moshe al Aaron. Kaches hamachta. Take the machta. Here Keturas comes in as the saving agent here. Retain olea eish me'al mizbeach. Put eish from the mizbeach. Vesim Keturas. Vaholech mehera le'edo vechaper aleihem. Go and effect some type of kapara for them. Ki yatzah ketzef melefnei Hashem hechel hanogef. A plague has begun. And a plague began, broke out, and was killing off Jewish people. Vayikach Aaron, Pasuk Yud Beis, kashedi b'moshe. Aaron took it. Vayaros hatoch hakal. He ran into the middle of the assembly. The plague had started. And he offered keturis in the way that it should be offered, and that offered that expiated for the people. And the plague stopped. Then there's now a toll, a death toll. 14,700 people. Yesterday was nothing compared to this. This is tomorrow. Yesterday, 14,700 people. Milvad hamesim al devar korach. That's apart from the people that died yesterday with korach. Now, there's a couple of questions here. Firstly, if we're particular, we should note that on day one, when Moshe was told to get away, the pasuk says in pasuk kaf aleph, perek tzayin pasuk kaf aleph, he bodlu mitocho eda. The verb used is he bodlu lehi badel, from the word habdala, detach yourself, divide yourself. Here in pasuk yud, the verb is hey romu. Everything else is the same. Hey romu means again remove yourself, like truma, right? Remove yourself. Everything else is the same. He bodlu mitocha eda v'achaleo sam karaga. He romu mitocha eda v'achaleo sam karaga. What's the difference between he bodlu and he romu? They're the same. Another point is that the way the Jewish people have been referred to so far has been as an eda. Yesterday in Pasuk Kaf Aleph, he bodlu mitocha eda. Also today, he romu mitocha eda. But in Pasuk Yud Beis, when Aaron takes the keteres, it says, and this is the first time we've had this expression used, Vayaratz el toch hakahal. He ran into the midst of the kahal. What's the kahal? Largely the same as an Eda, but the expression has changed. And once again, and then we'll go back to Eda again. So what's the difference between Eda and kahal? Why would that terminology change? And finally, I think it's also a striking question. The final pasuk, Hamesin b'Magefa, those that died in the plague, Abar Asar Elef Ushvamir, 14,700, okay. And then the pasuk adds this P.S. Milvad Hamesim al Dvar Korach. That's apart from the people that died on Dvar Korach yesterday. Presumably, because the people yesterday didn't die in a Magefa. So they died with other things. And therefore, even had the pasuk not made a point of telling me that these 14,700, if you told me they died in a plague, so then they're apart from the ones that died yesterday. And the pasuk says, apart from the ones that died yesterday. So why does the pasuk need to reinforce that? There is a most unusual answer to this question from Rabbi Yeshua Leib Diskin, the Rabbi Brisk later on here in Yerushalayim. These 2 days, day one and day two, day one has a gezeira, which is really leveled against the whole Jewish people, originally, so to speak. He bodlu mitocha eda v'achaleo sam karaga. The entire eda is in trouble. the entire Jewish people. Now that was annulled by Moshe. Moshe davened for them, and in the end, it didn't happen. Hashem ad Rachmanos. Today, when the Eda persists in complaining about this whole thing, so then what happens today is not a new decree. What happens today is actually reopening the original decree. Because the Jewish people are showing to a certain degree that their sympathies are still lying with what went on with Korach. So then they become susceptible to the decree that was annulled yesterday is brought back again. And the decree was to destroy them. However, even here, there is a measure of rachamim. The way that the rachamim will go, they will not get off with nothing today. Because it's an offense repeated, it's more serious now. But even so, the way the rachamim will express itself is by them able to bear the decree with a representation of the Jewish people. What does that mean? It means that a certain group that is large enough to be considered a representation of the Eda, they will bear the Magefa on behalf of the rest of the Eda, because it's them or the whole thing. The question is, what type of representation are we talking about? Where do you ever find such a thing? Says Myril Diskin, the minimal representation of a whole that a part can have on behalf of the whole is Truma, where you take one part and that represents the whole thing. That's what you give to the Kohen. That is why today HaKadosh Baruch Hu says Hei Romu Mitoch HaKohen. Until now, it's been Hibadlu, get away, detach yourself. There's a very specific expression being used today. Today, something will happen. The way that it will happen is Heiromu Mitocha Kahal. Heiromu Mitocha Eda. Truma will be taken from the Eda. It's them or everyone. Now, how much is Truma? Well, as we know, it's one of the things that has no Shir Min HaTorah, but the Rabbanon who are discerning as to what Truma should be, say it's anything between a 40th and a 60th. And in this instance, the optimum Truma is the 40th, and that's what needs to be taken. The Truma of the Jewish people that will come, Hey Roman Mitocha Eda, is the 40th of the Jewish people. So now the question is, how much is the 40th of the Jewish people? So first we have to find out how many are the Jewish people. The last count that we have, which is our marker here, is the count in the beginning of Bamidbar. The Jewish people total a number of 603,550. That's what the pasuk says. 603,550. Okay. What's the 40th of that? Well, if we start with the 600,000, so a 40th is basically 2.5%. So a 40th of 600,000 is 15,000. Okay. That leaves us with 3,550. Now, of the 3,550, if we take 3,000, divide it by 40, that will give us 75. So add that to our 15,000, we have 15,075. And what about our 550, right? The final increment, 550, divide that by 40, is actually 13.25. So narrowing down to 13, that gives us an extra 13. B'sach HaKol, it turns out that Heiromu Mitocha Eda, the Truma of the Eda, 1/40th, is 15,088. Okay, now we know. Now what happens is, well, how many people are killed in the plague? Not 15,088. The Pasuk tells us that Vayu Amesim B'Magefa, 14,700. So 14,700 is much less than 15,088. So how can we make up the figures? How can that be a 40th? Says the pasuk, Milvad Hamesim al Tvarkorach. That's aside from those that died yesterday over Tvarkorach, because it's the same gezerah, and therefore the two numbers combine. Well, how many people died yesterday in Tvarkorach? Well, the 250 men, Korach, Dasan, and Aviram. That's 253. So 253 from day one, added to 14,700 of day two is 14,953. And that's it. And that's still not enough, because that's still not 15,088. The difference between them, between 15,088 and 14,953, is 135 people. So where do they go? The answer, says Maral Diskin, is we shouldn't forget that there was an aspect of kapara here, meaning there were, when Aaron took action to bring the Ketores, there were certain people, the Magefa stopped, that means it stopped prematurely, and there were a certain number of people who were saved. So we posit that the number of people that were saved is the difference between the 14,953 and 15,088, and that is 135 people. The remez to that in the Torah is when he takes the Ketores, the Jewish people that have been referred to at every point until now as the Eidah are on this one occasion referred to as the Kahal. Because the word Kahal, Kuf Hei Lamed, has a gematria of 135. Because they are the 135 people that he saved. Because they make up the difference between 14,953 and 15,088. I think Chumash used to be learned differently. This is old school here. But this is the very stunning comment of Maral Diskin, and it's good to have Mayofa Yerushaseinu with the Meforshi HaTorah. Let's just conclude by referring to the concept of machlokas, where Pirkei Avos talks about two types of machlokas, Shem Shamayim, Shelo Shem Shamayim, and it says that a machlokas which is L'Shem Shamayim, Soful Hiskayim, in the end it will endure. That's Soful Hiskayim, if we just translate the words. Who is the original epitome of Machlokas, L'Shem Shamayim, Hillel V'Shamay? Their argument was for the sake of heaven, and Machlokas Shelo L'Shem Shamayim was the disaster group of Korah, the Chol Hadassa. They couldn't even get on with each other. The Malbim says it's not even called Machlokas Korach and Moshe. Even Korach with his own Eidah had enough Machlokas in before they even thought about who was on the outside. But it's a very interesting outcome that the Mishnah tells us, a machlokas that's l'shem shamayim, the good news is, so full is kaim, and the end it will endure. That doesn't sound to be such a good thing at all. I mean, the only one thing that's better than machlokas is no machlokas. So if the reward for having a good type of machlokas is that it keeps going, so then how is that in any way appealing? So the Abarbanel, in his Perush Nachlas Ovos on Pirkei Ovos, explains that when it says Soful Hiskayim, it doesn't mean that the Machlokas will endure. It means that the matter that the Machlokas was about will endure. In other words, if two people, for the best of intentions, the Shem Shamayim, are arguing as to what is the best way to go about something, that thing will endure. Because each person only is focusing on the good that they're arguing about. And therefore, each one, if it really is L'Shem Shamayim, will accept the best of the other's ideas, and the outcome will be the best of both. And so for L'Hiskayim, it's a short of a keel. The Vilna Gaon, in his Perush on Pirkei Avos, explains that so for L'Hiskayim, the Machlokas will endure, meaning the two sides of the Machlokas ultimately will be brought closer together. That's very interesting. So for L'Hiskayim, there will be a certain keel to those involved. They'll be miskayim together. And the reason why, and this is really what defines a machlokas L'Shem Shamayim, if it really is L'Shem Shamayim, then the other side only serves to bring you closer to the truth. And if all you're interested in is the truth, then the greatest thing someone else can do for you is to bring you closer to the truth. And if you're genuine about it, so then you should have nothing but gratitude to the person that you're arguing with, and it will strengthen the bonds. That's why the Gemara says in Kiddushin, Es Vahev Besufa, which is from Shiras HaBe'er, in next week's parasha, the Gemara darshans that even people who are arguing with each other in Torah, es vahe, which is an expression of ahava, besufa, at the end, right? They will actually bring them closer together, if they are genuine. But that is the acid test, says Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshutz. If everyone says that's the problem, it's a territorial hazard of machlokas, is that no machlokas will ever be advertised as a machlokas, shelo l'shem shamayim. They're always going to be officially L'Shem Shamayim, so it sounds like the Mishnah didn't help you, because the Mishnah says, be aware of Machlokas L'Shem Shamayim. I am aware of it, and that's why I never get involved in it. He gets involved in it. All my Machlokas are L'Shem Shamayim. So the Mishnah didn't really help us, because everyone knows to be aware of machlokas shelo l'shem shamayim, and then everyone rushes headlong into them. So how can you know? Sir Bionis and Ivishit says in the Yaros Dvash, the way it comes out is very simple. Are you able to sit at the same table as the person you're having machlokas with? You'll find, curiously enough, that there are certain people who fly the flag for it's all for the sake of heaven, and they can't stand to be anywhere near the people that they're arguing with. And they take it personally. Says the Yaros Dvash, that's a question mark on your L'shem Shamayim. Hillel and Shammai are the prime examples of machlokas L'shem Shamayim, because the Gemara says that as much as they argued with each other on, and they didn't stop arguing with each other on key points, very serious points, but their families always married each other. And even though there are certain even shailas in how to get married that are part of the machlokas by Hillel and Shammai, they worked it out. And that's why they're the epitome of machlokas L'shem Shamayim. Because for all of the machlokas in, it only brought them closer together. That's the way to do it. So that's, and it's, that is a very helpful meter for anyone. We never look to get involved in machlokas, and if anyone ever is, they can always check how l'shem shamayim they are by how prepared they would be to share a long bus ride with the people that they are involved in machlokas with. And of course, often the answer is disappointingly never. So these are some of the lekach to take away from the parsha of Korach. The issue of machlokas is in Yonah Diyoma every day, certainly this week. Leave it over there.